Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And as always, we're wishing you the best. We love to hear from you, and we love you to join us. If you go to naturalnurse.com under calendar, you will see all the events we are doing, both locally in your area and also online. For example, this week in Orlando, Florida, those of you who are listening there, we are giving a class on herbs, dowsing, and radionics, which is how you can help interact with herbs to discover exact dosing and exactly which herbs might be best for yourself or your friends or family, how much to use, when to use it, and lots of other very specific information that can make your herbal protocols more accurate and fulfilling. In a couple months, well, actually September, we will be doing our yearly Chinatown adventure where we go to Chinatown for the day and you learn about tongue and pulse diagnosis, Chinese medicine, herbal medicine in Chinatown. We go to a museum and we do a tour on the history of Chinese medicine. It's sort of a day in another country just by going to Manhattan. And this will be our, around our 55th trip that we are taking, and it always sells out. So if you're interested in that, go to naturalnurse.com calendar, scroll down to September, and you will find our Chinatown trip. And we're also now taking registration for next year's trip to Jamaica, where we go out in the jungle in Jamaica and we live with shamanic healers for 5 days. And that course you also get actually CEU credits, if that's something that you'd like, or college credits. So that's an exciting adventure. That'll be our 30th year going to Jamaica and living with the shamanic healers. So you're welcome to look into that as well. And then we have so many online classes like Careers in Natural Health. If you're thinking of studying for a new career and you'd like to switch over to a career in natural health, and also specific online courses. In next week we have one on natural remedies for inflammation, which is actually extracted from our book, Arthritis, the Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide. And that is a very easy class to join in online. Just go to naturalnurse.com calendar and scroll down. We'll also be at the Open Center and many other venues coming up. So we'd love to hear from you, and thank you for joining us today. Today we are very happy to have as our guest Dr. Norman Rosenthal. Dr. Rosenthal is a clinical professor of psychiatry at Georgetown Medical School and the New York Times best-selling author of many books, including Transcendence, Healing and Transformation Through Transcendental Meditation and the Gift of Adversity, which is a pretty big name, but today we are going to be talking to him about a new book called Supermind, Transcendental Meditation. Dr. Rosenthal has conducted research at the National Institute of Mental Health as a research fellow, researcher, and senior researcher for more than 20 years, and was the first psychiatrist to describe and diagnose SAD, seasonal affective disorder. His current work is studying the effects of botulism as a treatment for depression has earned him national attention in the media and in the world of psychology. And if you'd like to contact him, look at normanrosenthal.com. So thank you, Dr. Rosenthal, for joining us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Nice to be here.
Now, you have been doing meditation, I imagine, for a very long time. I myself studied directly with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi during his first or second trip here to the United States in the early 70s. So I personally have been doing transcendental meditation a very, very long time. How did you first get involved in it?
Well, the first time really was way back in South Africa when I was a medical student. And at that time, I didn't really take it as seriously as, in retrospect, I should have, because it was a fad of my youth. Everybody was going off to this little place in Johannesburg because the Beatles had just gone to visit Maharishi in India, and it seemed like a very cool thing to do. There was already some science in the area. And so I went with a friend, and I got my mantra, I learned the method, practiced a little bit, but not really. It fell off my busy schedule as I was a medical student back then. So here I was in my private practice office in Maryland 35 years later, when a young man with bipolar disorder told me that he was very, very happy, and it wasn't really my medicines that was doing it for him, in his opinion. It was the TM, Transcendental Meditation, and he urged me to go ahead and do it myself. And I resisted for a while, but, you know, I have learned that when the universe speaks to me, I need to listen, and that's how it felt. So I went ahead and I learned, and that was 8 years ago. So I've been meditating now for 8 years, and I've been taking it dead seriously. And it's been a most wonderful journey, and it's that journey that I share in my two books, Transcendence, and now, more recently, Supermind.
That's excellent. So although it's 8 years, which is a nice amount of time, respectable, but actually it goes... The introduction to it goes way back to an earlier time in your life. So
it
you said
does,
you just weren't
I want to just sort of communicate to listeners, because, you know, when people hear you've been doing this for 8 years and you've got this wonderful effect, and the radio host has been doing it for even longer and she's also got wonderful effects, the thing that concerns me is that people don't get daunted and feel that they have to do it for years and years and years before you see anything. Because literally within days or weeks of starting to meditate, some people have remarkable, even transformational effects. So benefits can come very, very early, and they just accumulate. And that's basically what, you know, we're describing and talking about in the Supermind, that all these benefits that come early and grow can actually be demonstrated. They can actually be observed. I've interviewed, for this new book, I created a questionnaire where I interviewed people and said to them, you know, since you've been starting to meditate, they were meditators, about 600. Since you've started to meditate, you know, what of these different things have you discovered? And there is a whole host of benefits that they have found, not just physical, which is huge in its own right, but actual psychological and personality changes that they've noticed.
Well, Dr. Rosenthal, it appears that you have this questionnaire for those people who are interested right in your brand new book, Supermind. I'm looking at a questionnaire that begins on page 267. Is this similar to the one that you're talking about, consciousness integration questionnaire?
It is exactly the same. I wanted the people who read the book to have access to the exact same questionnaire we used in the study. And I thought it would be a very cool thing. They could fill it out, you know, when they start to meditate or wherever they are, and then maybe 3 months later and see if they've changed. It's kind of a fun thing to do.
The other thing is, of course, you are a psychiatrist, highly trained, and a medical researcher. So although this is a book about something that might feel sort of soft in terms of the title, Supermind Transcendental Meditation, in every single chapter you have your statements and teachings verified by mainstream scientific studies which measure outcomes.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, oftentimes you make observations and the science just isn't there. So there's nothing you can do about that. You can't go creating science, and those observations can still be valid. But wherever there is backing, wherever experiments have been done, of course, it's always wonderful to integrate the science and the just anecdotal observations. I love to do that, and I think that the readers appreciate that.
You have some wonderful people who signed the back of this book, Supermind, including Arianna Huffington and Maria Shriver. So that's very nice.
Yeah, no, I think that one thing we've noticed is that transcendental meditation, you know, it's a little bit of a two-edged sword when you see all these celebrities who do transcendental meditation and endorse it, because on the one hand, people could say, well, it's only for the rich, famous, highly successful people. And that would be so untrue, because just about anybody can benefit. But I think one reason why people who are achieving at such high levels are attracted to the technique is that often these are people who really want to push themselves to the limit. They want to do the very, very best they can. They're in a competitive world. They are ambitious people. They want to self-actualize and be the best they can be. And so when they come across a technique that offers with some justification to do that, it is very appealing to them. But I would once again say, please, if you, whatever you do, whatever your occupation is, whatever your status is in society, this technique can help you. And the book is full of ordinary people who have gained benefits, not just Hugh Jackman, Cameron Diaz, and all the people we can read about in the magazines.
Well, on that vent, in terms of bringing this information to people who might find this new, you use two vocabulary words that I know that you know that I know what they mean, but I'd like you to define them further for our audience. And the first one is the word mantra.
Yeah, mantra simply means a sound, a word sound. And that word sound then becomes used as the vehicle for which you do your TM and get the effects. So a mantra is simply a word sound. It often has no meaning to the meditator and is used in a certain way that one is taught when one learns TM. And that's basically it. That's what a mantra is. These are words that have been derived from Sanskrit, and they have a special soothing sound that has been found to be conducive to eliciting the kind of consciousness changes that are crucial, that they're the actual agent of change in this particular kind of meditation. We should talk more about those. But the mantras have been chosen because they seem to have the effect that we're looking for, and that's about it.
Well, you named your book Supermind. What do you mean by that term?
Well, that's a great question because, you know, somebody might say, can I become Mozart or Einstein? Can I develop superminds like theirs? No. You know, we all have our biological limits. However, I think that within many of us is a sense that we're not fully expressing our potential, that whatever it is we're doing with our minds, we could be doing a little bit more or a lot more. And that's really what the book is designed to help you to do, how to grow those capacities so that they are at their maximum and that you can not only perform at your best, achieve your best, but also live your fullest, richest possible life from day to day. It's a wonderful promise, and it's one that I happily put forward because I have experienced it myself, I have seen it in others, and I believe that if implemented, people can benefit from it as well. And, you know, I'm in the, for like almost 40 years now, I've been a psychiatrist, so I'm in the people change business. I mean, people who just want to be different, be better, be more efficient, be happier, be more productive, expand, change. You know, we hear a lot, it's the election season, and everybody's going to say, you know, who's the change candidate? Well, I think people like the idea of change for the better. And that's been really my, you know, stock in trade. And so when I come across something that I see has a huge potential to change people, make them live better lives, and express themselves more fully, is very exciting to me. So that's what Supermind embodies.
Now, in terms of transcendental meditation, there are many, many forms of meditation. They span a wide range of practices. And one kind that I did see mentioned in your book as well is called mindfulness meditation. And mm-hmm. I actually have been recently finding that especially people who are very new to the practice and might be considered people more, you know, solidly based in a mainstream kind of mindset, and they may find something with Eastern ramifications threatening, they do very, very well with mindfulness meditation, where there's no special sitting, no special rules, and no actual use of a mantra. So what has been your experience with that, since you actually do mention mindfulness in your book?
Yeah, I think it's important to mention mindfulness for several reasons. It also goes under the name of meditation, just like TM does. So when people talk about meditation, it's important that they understand that there are different types of meditation. And then they want to know, well, what's the difference? So in order to distinguish between the two, I have a chapter on the comparison between transcendence and mindfulness. Now, they're both called meditation, but they're very, very different practices, like cycling and free weights could both be called exercise, but they're very, very different. They exercise different parts of the body. They're not the same, obviously. So the same applies to mindfulness and transcendence. Now, mindfulness, they both come from great traditions. Mindfulness comes from the Buddhist tradition. Transcendental meditation comes from the Vedic tradition. They're both practiced by millions of practitioners across the world. So it's not like it's a competition. They're both found to be useful by different groups of people. And so what is the difference then between the practices? Well, as you've characterized it, people who do mindfulness, they have got instructions as to what they do. And their instruction essentially is to put their attention to what is going on here and now in some part of their world, whether it's the external world, listening to the moment-to-moment changes in the world, in the sounds, looking at the leaves and the trees, watching this, watching that, and how it changes from moment to moment, or an internal thing. That could be your breathing, it could be your sensations of your body, it could be focusing on a loving-kindness thought or an image. So it's focusing on something specific with intention and a positive attitude in the here and now, as opposed to sitting and closing your eyes and automatically accessing a mantra in the way that you've been taught. And the effects are different. The first type of meditation helps you understand the present moment, helps you understand how the present is changing moment to moment, and it gives you an insight into the world as it really is here and now. The other practice, TM, puts you into a different state of consciousness, at first during your meditation, and then as you practice a little more, that state of consciousness begins to filter out into your waking life. So that's a very big difference. However, very interestingly, in our questionnaire, when we asked people who are TMers, have you been more mindful of your world since starting TM, there was a huge number that said, yes, we have. It's increased our mindfulness. So, you know, obviously there's some overlap there.
Oh, definitely. And What's interesting, too, is there has been some excellent research in terms of the effects on the brain, actually physiological effects of the brain, of various kinds of both meditation techniques and has actually been compared to prayer. I found a fascinating study where they did brain mapping, and one of the participants, in fact, was a transcendental meditation person. Mm-hmm. You're probably familiar with this study. Another group were Buddhist monks, and another group were Catholic nuns. And when they did the brain mapping, when each of those groups felt they had gotten to that state of elevated consciousness, which we'll talk about next, or a change in consciousness, and they did brain mapping, they found that the exact same thing went on in terms of the area of their brain that was affected. So I guess there's, you know, many paths to the same place, and people find what actually works best for them.
Yeah, you know, I'm actually not familiar with that study. I'd be fascinated if you have a link to it, if you could send it to me.
But, I do. You know what? Remind me. It was published in Newsweek magazine. The whole study was, written up and published in May of 2008, and I do believe I have an electronic copy of it.
Love to see it. Thank you.
And there's so many studies on transcendental meditation. I think it's one of the best studied forms of meditation.
Yeah, you know, the founder, Maharishi, was a scientist himself, and he was very emphatic about, studying the technique, putting it into experimental tests.
Very much so. So now that would be, you know, a good entry to discuss. What do you mean by, and what does your book discuss in terms of expanded state of consciousness?
Well, I think that's just a terrific, terrific thing because, you know, when I think of expanded states of consciousness, I think of it in two ways. Maharishi had an expression, water the root and enjoy the fruit. What he meant by that was as you meditate twice a day, which is the recommended frequency, you enrich a part of your psyche through that twice daily meditation. And the psyche, as it were, grows. And you feel different feelings. For example, I'll give you a few examples of that. You know how during the day we feel the ups and downs of daily life. You get a piece of good news, you feel a little lift, then somebody gives you a piece of bad news, it goes down, and so it is through the day that as things change, you're frustrated about something, somebody disses you, whatever. There are all these little things that go on during your day that are buffeting you about one way or another. But as you continue to meditate, you get the feeling that there's a sort of steady internal experience or essence that doesn't change. That's the real you. There's a feeling that you have an authentic essence that is you and that is enduring throughout these transitory changes. And that's a nice feeling. And you can imagine it's like you've been on a ship that's been kind of tilting to and fro, and now you're on a stable surface, and you see the things around you tilting up and down, but you keep a steady footing. Feels very good, and it's an easier place from which to operate and accomplish things. So that's a little example of the kinds of change in consciousness that occur. But I think that sounds very abstract. Most exciting to the listeners and to anybody who reads Supermind or thinks about it are the very tangible gifts that come, the fruit, if you want. And those are outlined all in the second part of the book, and I'd like to just kind of go through them a little bit.
Well, you know what? We will do that, but right at this moment, we're going to take our first break.
Perfect.
Listen to a natural medicine chest. And when we come back, let's do exactly what you recommended. And we want to remind you, listeners, that you are listening to Dr. Norman Rosenthal, MD, author of Supermind, How to Boost Performance and Live a Richer and Happier Life Through Transcendental Meditation. And we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the folklore, history, chemistry, and medicinal applications of the common kitchen herb, thyme.
The common culinary spice known botanically as Thymus vulgaris is only one member of a large genera which includes over 400 species and even more varieties. The Thymus genera is originally native to the Mediterranean region and is a perennial plant which grows wild in usually dry, sandy soil, green heaths, and grasslands. Thyme is a prolific, fragrant, creeping ground cover and often displays an attractive spray of flowering branchlets spanning the spectrum from white to violet.
There is considerable debate amongst historians as to the origin of the name thyme. Some believe it to be from the Greek thymen, meaning to fumigate or to burn a sacrifice, because it was used as a sweet-smelling incense and also to keep pests and venomous creatures away from the Greek home. Others believe it came from the Greek thumos, meaning courage or energy, perhaps because it has a reputation of being used by Greek warriors for courage and was bathed in and used as a beverage for invigoration. The Egyptians used an herb called tham, which we believe is Thymus vulgaris, to mummify their dead. The principal chemical constituents of thyme are the volatile oils consisting of phenol, thymol, and carvacrol. A 1977 article in the scientific journal Chemical Abstracts revealed that thymol's antimicrobial activity is 18 times more powerful than phenol. Phenol is a major antiseptic used in commercial germicidal cleaners like Lysol. Thymol is one of the most potent antimicrobial substances known and far surpasses even the strongest antibiotics. It has been illustrated in the Journal of Chemistry and in the Merck Index of Drugs and Chemicals to destroy parasites, worms, fungi, bacteria, mosquito larvae, and many viruses.
The pharmaceutical and cosmetic industry is privy to the important medicinal effects of oil of Thymus vulgaris. It is ubiquitously found in gargles, cough drops, vapor rubs, and many mouthwashes. Oil of thyme is to be used, albeit very sparingly because of its potency, as a gargle or mouthwash for sore throats and inflamed gums. Because the volatile oil is expelled via the lungs and kidneys, naturopathic physicians use it for upper respiratory infections and urinary tract infections. If you're in the midst of a cold and are lying in bed with too much thyme on your hands, try making a thyme tea made with just a few teaspoons of thyme to a cup of boiling water. It's an excellent diaphoretic because it causes the body to perspire profusely. Thyme also possesses an excellent carminative and antispasmodic effect, helping in poor digestion, flatulence, and intestinal gripe.
So, listeners, if you're feeling ill, thyme heals all wounds. Remember to reach for that thyme in a bottle the next time you open up the Natural Medicine Chest.
Thank you for joining us once right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, and you can find us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. We love to hear from you. We know about 200,000 of you are downloading these podcasts. We are so happy about that. And we'd like to hear from you, and you can always join us live on the ground in our many workshops. You can look at our books such as The Natural Medicine Chest, Arthritis, the Alternative Medicine Guide, Weight Loss, the Alternative Medicine Guide, The Natural Guide to Great Sex, and many other books that we have available. You can find them at naturalnurse.com books. And do get in touch. Today, we are so happy to have as our guest the New York Times best-selling author of Transcendence, Healing, and Transformation Through Transcendental Meditation, and The Gift of Adversity, Dr. Norman Rosenthal. He's a clinical professor of psychiatry at Georgetown University School of Medicine, and has conducted research at the National Institute of Mental Health as a research fellow, researcher, and senior researcher for more than 20 years, and he was the first psychiatrist to describe and diagnose seasonal affective disorder. So we are really thrilled to have him on board today as our guest, talking about his new book, Super Mind, How to Boost Performance and Live a Richer and Happier Life Through Transcendental Meditation. So welcome back to the show, Dr. Rosenthal.
Thank you.
Now, you're going to go into what you talk about in depth in part two of your book, which is really, you know, so what are the benefits of learning these simple techniques?
Yeah, you know, because somebody can say, oh, well, you know, I'm going to get a super mind, you know, big deal, what does that mean, you know? It sounds like a sort of pie-in-the-sky promise. So, you know, I like to kind of get down to out of the pie in the sky and down to the meat and potatoes, or for the vegetarians, the tofu and potatoes, and look at what are the actual concrete things you might get. So here I'm going to go through just the chapter headings and just illustrate them with a little vignette that kind of brings home the message, although my technique is really to make the issues very human, very concrete. And then out of those human stories comes the idea behind them. And also then I'll back it up with the science, because the science given up front becomes very dry. So I bring it out through people. So starting with the first of the gift chapters is connecting the body and the mind. And here we have a wonderful story of a brilliant ballet dancer who's become a wonderful friend. Her name is Megan Fairchild, principal dancer for the New York City Ballet, excuse me. And she had developed some fainting spells that were unpredictable. They could come on at any time. And clearly that is a career killer, let alone dangerous, for a ballerina. And someone suggested she do TM, which she did, and the fainting spells went away completely without any medicine, because there's an extensive literature on TM stabilizing people's physiology. But the more interesting part, even than that to me, is that she had always been a perfectionist who had avoided taking risks, and that all changed. And now she was willing to venture out and take risks and do something she could never previously have contemplated, and that was audition for a Broadway show where the actress would need to sing and act and dance. Now, dance, she had that nailed, but the singing and talking from a stage, that was very alien and scary for her. But she thought, you know, the only way you progress and grow is to take risks and push the envelope, which she did. Got the part in the room, had a year on Broadway as a dancer, singer, actress in On the Town, which is a Leonard Bernstein production, and got very fine reviews and expanded her whole world and had a fantastic experience. So that was an example of somebody who has transformed herself first physiologically and then psychologically through TM. And we were supposed to be on a TV show together, and she said, sure, I'm up for it, sign me on. And then the TV show didn't come through. And I called her up and I said, you know, TV shows get canceled all the time. It's a little bit of a disappointment, but the big disappointment was I was really looking forward to meeting you. How about breakfast tomorrow? She said, I'm on. Where are we going to meet? And it was that kind of readiness to venture out, take risks, roll with the punches that was particularly impressive. And so that was a sort of a lovely story for me to illustrate one of the gifts, connecting body and mind and venturing out, growing. You see, consciousness grows. Then I say building a better brain. And here I start with an actress, Cameron Diaz, who was on a film set in the Los Angeles Zoo. And it was hot as hell, and she couldn't remember her lines, which she had previously gotten down pat. And she said to the people where they were filming, she said, listen, I need 25 minutes to go to my trailer and do my meditation. She came back, she nailed the lines. It's extraordinary how your memory improves. You know, little things that slip one's mind, one can't think of the name of this or that or something, often come back to me when I'm meditating. They just come back to me. Somehow we've blocked those memories through stress or through worries or through other things we're bothering about, knock them off the main screen, and when you meditate, they all come back again. One of the most remarkable stories there is a friend of mine who, with her husband, had traded in an old car. You know, when you trade in an old car, you go through the car from top to toe. You try to find out everything that you saw value that you don't want to leave in the old car. And they went through it twice, combed through it carefully. The next day in her meditation, she realized she'd left the easy pass on the windshield behind the rearview mirror. And it just came back to her. And that's how meditation is. It brings you ideas, connections, associations, memories, and there's a lot of science behind it, which I won't go into. It's a little technical, but suffice it to say that that both in members of a military university and in students in Taiwan, studies done thousands of miles apart, a decade apart, have revealed actual formal testing improves on multiple parameters after TM. And I could go on and on, but perhaps before I do, you might have a question about a specific
I do. Skill. I do, Doctor. And I do want to remind our listeners that you are listening to Dr. Norman Rosenthal, and he is the author of the new book, Super Mind, How to Boost Performance and Live a Richer and Happier Life Through Transcendental Meditation. In terms of the examples that you gave, Dr. Rosenthal, the people that you're referring to are, I would say, just the couple that you did refer to, and of course yourself, you're referring to people who are really highly functional, and talking about a famous dancer who obviously those kinds of unknown changes in her balance and those kinds of things could be devastating to her career. But how about people all the way on the other end who are really dealing with, you know, difficulty just in, let's say, having a job? They may not even be able to have a job because of depression and really, you know, severe memory impairments due to this depression and having very poor judgment. How about people on that end of the spectrum?
Well, I love your question because it's so important. Now, I'm not going to talk about people, you know, with a devastating depression, because that obviously is a major illness that has to be treated in its own right. And even though I love meditation and I recommend it widely, I'm a psychiatrist. I give out medication. I do whatever is necessary to help people get better. I'm not an ideologue. I'm a doctor. I want people to get better. I want people to grow and change. So I don't get stuck on what is natural or what is artificial or what is this or that. I get stuck on what can I do to help this person recover and be their fullest person. So I wouldn't really be talking about severe depression, but I do get your concept. So let me give you three very small little vignettes. The one was a woman, a housewife, who was overwhelmed and very resentful because she was shouldering an excess burden of the domestic stuff. And she would make dinner for the family, and she would put it out on the table, and then she would clear the table, and then she would load the dishwasher and run the dishwasher. And by the time it came to unloading that dishwasher, she just couldn't do it. It was just one last step too far. She was resentful. She was stressed, she was angry, couldn't unload the dishwasher, started to learn meditation, and within days of learning, she called the teacher and said, you know, not only am I unloading the dishwasher, but I'm whistling while I'm doing it. It was just the relief of that tension that enabled her to have that extra energy and the extra good cheer to do something as mundane, but to her it had been that last straw. And now there was plenty more energy for more straw. And so that was a simple example in a simple situation. Here's a second one. A veteran learns TM, and 2 days into the learning process, he calls the teacher. He says, you know, I just want to let you know I laughed today. She said, well, I'm glad, but what's the big deal about that? He said, well, you don't really get it. It's the first time I've laughed in 7 years. The burden of the post-traumatic stress from the traumas he had faced made it impossible for him to experience joy and laugh. And just 2 or 3 days of stress relief allowed him to do that. And the last one, and these are all in the book, by the way, and the last one, which I really love, is a man I interviewed personally, a homeless man who was in a homeless shelter when I interviewed him, who he'd led a terrible life. He'd gotten into drugs. Traded drugs, he'd been violent, he'd injured people, he landed up in a federal prison, and somehow he managed to get himself out and into this program, but was still very, very resentful because he was, you know, viewed as a criminal. He was kind of looked askance at, and he had an attitude towards everybody. And then he started to meditate. And the meditation just changed him. In fact, he was just sitting in a park, minding his own business, not realizing that the park had a notice up there saying, no adults allowed, this is for children, this is for minors. They wanted to protect the minors from predators. And the policeman came, what are you doing here? You're not supposed to be here. And you will have to appear in court on thus and such a date. And here he is, you know, he's trying to rehabilitate himself. He has learned now to meditate. And, you know, the idea that he was now being accused, as he saw it, of wanting to prey on minors was very, very abhorrent to him. And he got very angry. And he went to court. And, you know, the judge started, he said the judge looked not like he was really trying to get to the truth. He was kind of playing to the gallery and sort of saying, well, have you got any child pornography on your computer? Have you ever molested children? I mean, he hadn't done anything. He was just in the park. And in the past, he would have cursed the judge. He would have acted out. He would have landed in jail because he wouldn't have been able to contain his temper. And he said, no, sir, you know, I would never do such a thing. This is not what I was just was resting in the park. And he was able to contain his rage. And the officer who had charged him didn't show up at the court. So the guy said, well, case dismissed. And he thought, I can't believe it. I'm getting out of here. Nothing's happening to me. And he went home and he was so grateful and he realized it was the meditation that had helped him resist his impulse to lose his temper. And then he ended up by saying to me, he said, and you know, now I have a job. They've given me a job at this shelter. They give me a uniform, and I clean the streets in the uniform. And when people see me cleaning the streets in the uniform, they smile at me. They greet me like a normal citizen and feel so wonderful. And then he says, and at lunchtime, I go to Central Park, and I found a place on the hill where I sit down and I listen to the birds singing and I do my mantra and I do my meditation, and I'm as happy as a person can be. So that's the other side of the spectrum.
That's an excellent example. And Thank you, Dr. Norman Rosenthal, MD, author of Supermind. We're going to take our next little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can always find us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook The Natural Nurse, and we will be right back in just a few minutes. Stand by.
Stay tuned to PRN.FM for more empowering ideas from progressive voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
The story behind the story, your story, my story, it's all in the mix on Lead Stories right here on PRN.FM. This is Utrice Lead inviting you to share your thoughts and opinions and expand your knowledge about critical issues of the day, Monday through Friday, right after Gary Null's show. Listen live to a broadcast or get Lead Stories whenever you want from PRN's archive. You can even rate the show on iTunes. Now pass the word. Tell this story to everyone you know. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Hi, I'm David Crow, host of The Infectious Myth, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time here on PRN.FM. I love science the way it should be practiced. But a lot of modern science is corrupted by financial interests and serves a master other than the public good. Myths continue to be constructed around viruses, vaccines, forensics, and pharmaceutical drugs. People are dying and ending up in jail because of them. Listen to me as I deconstruct the myths that those who call themselves scientists weave, or when I wander into social and political topics. If you're new to the show, check out our past episodes at infectiousmyth.podbean.com.
This is PRN, the comprehensive news source for the world's progressive community. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
And welcome back once again right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, and you can find us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Today we are so happy to have as our guest the author of Supermind, How to Boost Performance and Live a Richer and Happier Life Through Transcendental Meditation, and that is Dr. Norman Rosenthal, medical doctor, psychiatrist, and a professor of psychiatry at Georgetown University. He's been on the forefront in medicine, also with research at the National Institute of Mental Health, and also described and diagnosed Seasonal Affective Disorder, SAD, which is really profound, Dr. Rosenthal. I think so many people suffer with that, including myself, and how I have dealt with it, and I realize not everyone can do that, but I've actually focused my plans in life so that I can follow the sun. So I actually live in Florida a good part of the year, and then also in northern climes, when the weather is nice. And I actually plan my lecture schedule accordingly. When someone says, would you come teach a class or give a lecture in Chicago? I pull out my calendar and go, absolutely. When in June or July would work for you? So I know
not everybody
is fortunate enough to do that, but it actually comes with planning, and I think it comes with having been a meditator for so many years, to be able to decrease my stress and see what will do that.
I'm smiling here because I got this invitation from a meditator friend, come and teach a course in Chicago, 15th of February. I said, are you kidding? I've got seasonal affective disorder. Do you want a zombie teaching your course in the middle of February? Absolutely
not. Oh, that's so funny.
Right. Last September, and we negotiated it well. So, yes, I think that being a meditator is a step, but I think a key to me is that it sensitizes you to become aware of your internal state and validate it, you know, however you're feeling, you know, because there's often a feeling, oh, I should be able to pull myself up by my shoestrings and do this. I mean, don't be such a sissy, you know, get up and whatever, whatever. But it's a biological thing, and I think one needs to give oneself the permission to be where one is and do the best you can, and do the best you can with what you have, but also take good care of oneself, which means not taking on a course in January if you've got seasonal affective disorder.
Right, and the anxiety that would come to me, let's say, even worrying about doing that in the mm-hmm. future. So that, I think, is one of the many, many benefits by becoming more self-aware that meditation can do for you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And you have such great programs in your book about how people can, you know, actually be have more positive feelings, greater resilience, less anxiety. Mm-hmm. I think the improved memory is wonderful. Mm-hmm. And better judgment. So many people I know get themselves in trouble. Really, but why did you make that choice at that juncture in life? We you could clearly see where that was going to lead them. I wonder why they have trouble seeing that.
Right. Right. Well, you know, I think it's all about being in tune with oneself. And when you sit down twice a day and you think your mantra, you get in better tune with yourself.
That is very true. And, you know, there is no downside to doing meditation, is there?
Not
There's
really,
no, you
no.
know, physiological
I mean, you know,
negative
that,
effect from doing it.
That,
I mean, it's not like
that,
you said you use pharmaceuticals. And, of course, they're important in certain situations, but we do have to look at the adverse event profile as part of the use. While with TM, there's really, I don't think, any particular kind of adverse effect.
Yeah, no, I think that's pretty much it. The side effects are negligible, almost absent.
That's just amazing, right? You know, to have something that really is so beneficial, why wouldn't people just give it a try? No matter what area of function you are at the moment, it is going to be helpful. And I know there's so much research, and you talk about the fact that the supermind, which can occur through regular meditation, can be measured.
Yes. Well, now with this questionnaire, you can measure it, but also there are EEG studies that have measured supermind functions and actually show that it's physiological. It's not just psychological.
That's right. Just, you know, just wonderful data. And I know that you put together the questionnaire that anyone can use. And what would they find out in terms of self-study by doing this questionnaire?
Well, I think the most valuable thing for them would be that they could compare themselves at two time points and see what kind of changes were coming about and what they were able to how they were able to grow, you know, from point one to point two. And it's fun to be able to see yourself growing and developing in ways that are meaningful. The other thing is that, you know, there are certain traits that come through with the supermind that you wouldn't even necessarily think about if you didn't focus on them. For example, one chapter deals with the capacity to attach but then to detach, which is very important because, you know, it's important to, as the country and Western song goes, it's important to know when to hold them and when to fold them, you know? When is the,
that's a good
when
one.
Is the job or relationship working for you and when is it not? So these are some of the things that I think grow with a supermind and that the questionnaire will elicit in ways that you might not notice otherwise.
Well, we're going to continue this discussion because I know that there's things like expansion of consciousness, which is a big topic, but also just impacting daily lives is very important.
Yes, yes, of course. Of course, both are important. You know, consciousness seems to be so abstract and so intangible, but once you feel it, it isn't. You know, just like happiness is tangible. These are things that when you feel it, you really do notice something, and then when you see the fruits that it yields, that in turn deepens the experience further. So I hope that those who read the book will reap these kinds of rewards and maybe consider doing TM, which I say is not the only way to get to the supermind, but it's certainly the most reliable and predictable way I know to get there.
Well, you know, certainly, and of course, free of side effects, and a way that people can try it. I really recommend everyone just gives it a try. You know, like you said, transcendental meditation is one path that has been very well proven and has the data to support its use in a wide range of situations. They've done it on, like you said, veterans. They've done it on people in prisons who are really, you know, have a lot to struggle with. And then so many people like you discussed who are highly functional, such as well-known movie stars and athletes, have found it equally as supportive. So it's sort of good for everybody at any point in their life. And I really, really highly recommend that people do take a look at your book because you explain it so beautifully and simply and also include that questionnaire. As we get towards the end of the time that we have together, Doctor, what would you say, just to wrap up, how people can find you, find your book, and just, you know, a parting word of wisdom from someone with so much knowledge?
Well, you know, firstly, thank you so much for the opportunity. It's been a great pleasure to talk to you. My website is very simple. It's normanrosenthal.com. I'm on Twitter and Dr. Norman, D-O-C-T-O-R, Norman. And you can follow me on Facebook on Dr. Norman Rosenthal, Dr. Norman Rosenthal. So those three places. But my website is the easiest. And come check out all the stuff that I've got on there. And I keep changing it and adding to it as new things arise. And my books really tell my story. So,
well, we have to end there. Thank you so much for being our guest today, and thank you, listeners. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.